It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now to the data collection and the findings from the National Atmospheric Deposition Program. It's located on the campus of UW-Madison, monitoring pollution deposited around North America from rainfall since 1978. Join in on air pollutant monitoring, what you've wondered, 800-642-1234. Conversation right here, 800-642-1234. David Gay is coordinator of the National Atmospheric Deposition Program. David, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Nice to be here.
Yes. Mike Randall, your colleague here as well, an instrumentation technologist with the program. And by the way, called in during our caller-only program to say, hey, you know, this is important stuff to talk about. Mike, welcome and thank you for doing that.
Thank you, Kate. It's I'm really happy to be here.
Great. Well, Mike, let's start with you. As a relatively new employee of this program, were you surprised to learn about the work it does?
Very much so. So my background is in science outreach. I've been doing that for a long time, including I ran the Wonders of Physics program here on campus for 5 years. With the pandemic, my business wasn't going so well. So a friend of mine told me about this technician job on campus. I thought, yeah, I can do that. Well, when I got here, I found out what they were up to. I had no idea of the important work that this program has done. And that's why I called in a couple of weeks ago on the listener program. It's like, I really want the people of Wisconsin to know what a gem of a program now exists at the UW-Madison campus.
Well, David, you know, that's a great introduction here. Let's hit pause and explain what is atmospheric deposition and what you are monitoring.
So atmospheric deposition is basically solids and gases in the atmosphere that deposit down to the ground. And it comes in a couple of different ways. It can come through wet deposition, which is basically the precipitation washing the atmosphere clean, or dry deposition, where pollutants and other solids fall out of the atmosphere on their own. And NADP, or the National Atmospheric Deposition Program, we primarily do wet deposition. So we measure the flow of pollutants out of the atmosphere with precipitation on a national and really international scale.
So these chemicals are like hitching a ride on snow and rain, on hail, inhale, things like that?
Right, exactly. So any sort of pollution gets emitted into the atmosphere from industrial, from industry, vehicles, any kind of fire, and those pollutants go into the atmosphere and move around as the atmosphere moves. And as I'm sure most of your listeners know, or at least can sense, that when it rains, the rain actually cleans the atmosphere of a lot of pollutants. The atmosphere always looks cleaner, if you will, after it rains. And we capture that precipitation here at the ground and measure or determine how much pollution is in that rainfall. Hmm. And we do it on a regular basis at a lot of different locations. And we can learn a lot of things from that information.
But it also, Mike, depends on really good solid data and all of the things that, you know, go into that and the technology. How much of an impact and how difficult is it to do this data collection on a large scale?
So we've got, I think David could probably answer this better than I could, but it was like over 300 sites across North America. We've got sampling machines called collectors set up in a wide variety of locations in both urban and rural settings, national parks, First Nations lands, just as a very broad area. And that equipment gets exposed to the environment 24/7, 365. And part of my job is when that equipment takes a beating and it comes back to our lab for repair. You never know what you're going to see coming back, but it's very important we keep it all running so they can keep sampling and keep getting consistent data, you know, day after day, month after month, year after year, you know, and keep that stuff in operation as much as possible.
Can you give can you give us a visual? What does this equipment and technology look like?
Well, my joke is that I think they hired me because it's a good part of it is like 1970s era technology. So I figured it's like I learned technology in the 70s, so yeah,
This
that
is my
probably fits me
jam.
well. Yeah. So now people think, well, that's not very sophisticated. We do have much newer equipment in the field, but a lot of times that the old equipment stays in the field because it is so important that the data that we collect is consistent. You know, if we make a change, maybe an upgrade to a piece of equipment, but it collects the rain a little differently, can then we reliably compare that the data we take today with data that was taken 30, 40 years ago? So it's very important that the data be consistent, and probably the simplest way to keep doing that is just keep using the same or similar equipment. Not to say that we don't upgrade it from time to time, but it's a very laborious, or it's a very cautious process to do that. So,
Mike Randall with us and David Gay with the National Atmospheric Deposition Program. Join in on atmospheric deposition. What's in the stuff moving from the atmosphere to the Earth's surface? The chemicals to measure over time, and why? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation ahead on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kend. We take stock of a program housed at the UW that is focused on the data and the science of acid rain and atmospheric deposition, the chemicals from the atmosphere that hitch a ride in rain and sleet and so come down. Join in on the work of precipitation chemistry, 800-642-1234. Conversation is right here, 800-642-1234. National Atmospheric Deposition Program Coordinator David Gray is here, and instrumentation technologist Mike Randall. They stay with us. Let's take a call now. Karen in Medina. Karen, what's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have been reading so much about microplastics lately and having them like in the water table, in the ocean. I am wondering if microplastics have made it into our rain or our atmosphere, or is that something that we should be concerned about happening? And does their 1970s equipment measure it?
Karen, thank you. David.
It's a very good question, Karen. Our old equipment, and it's not all old, but the old stuff is out there. And yes, we are seeing microplastics in precipitation. There's been several studies, and one of them, or several of them, have now used our samples to look for microplastics, and they are quite easy to find. We find them in most of the samples at very low concentrations. How important from a health perspective it is, I don't know. I'm not a biologist, I'm a physical scientist, but there are microplastics in precipitation for sure.
Does location or geography matter?
It probably matters in how much you find, but I think it's clear to say that we're finding them, microplastics all over North America.
Okay. You know, I was a child of the 70s. I vividly recall the big acid rain scare during the 70s and 80s. Without a doubt, it was the hottest environmental scare of the era.
For sure.
What do you see in acid rain today?
Well, I can say quite clearly that the acid rain problem has gotten a whole lot better than it was. The Clean Air Acts and the Clean Air Act amendments have restricted the emission of sulfur dioxide, which ultimately was the issue or one of the issues, and nitrogen oxides to the atmosphere. And those emissions have gone down drastically. And we've seen the pH of rainfall increase, which is the correct direction, back towards normal pH. Acid rain is still, I should say, precipitation is still more acidic than it would be normally, but it's tremendously better than it was back in the 60s and 70s when they figured the problem was going on. So it's much better today than it was.
That is a positive
in North America.
Positive news there. A current event here, the program samples and tests precipitation in Puerto Rico. Of course, Hurricane Fiona, just devastating, delivering flooding rains there. What can you learn from like a deluge of precipitation?
Well, with very high precipitation, you tend to get very high loadings of all these particulates or all these pollutants. The concentration goes down because it gets the same amount of pollutant gets distributed over a larger volume, but you have so much rain, you get a lot of input down to the ground. So concentration tends to get less, but the loading or the flux to the surface tends to go up tremendously. My specialty is mercury, and that's definitely the case with mercury. We see, with a situation like this where they're getting 10, 20 inches of rain, you can end up with as much loading in a year in one event. So that's the big summary of this. When you have a very heavy rainstorm, you tend to get a lot of pollutant deposition through wet deposition.
Yes, National Atmospheric Deposition Program Coordinator there, David Gay. We have instrumentation technologist Mike Randall as well explaining the monitoring of air pollution and this effort that started back in the 70s with acid rain. Join in 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show. We continue this conversation ahead. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing a program that monitors precipitation chemistry, the National Atmospheric Deposition Program. That's what it's called, a cooperative effort, so many different groups involved. Join in on what's coming down from the atmosphere to Earth, why it matters to study it, 800-642-1234. We have instrumentation technologist Mike Randall, and David Gay is here, coordinator of the program. They stay with us. Let's go to the phones now. Ricky in Oconomowoc. Ricky, what would you like to bring up?
Hi. Two questions, actually. I see the haze that comes from west to east when we have the big wildfires in Calgary and California. And then we have alerts for people who have heart disease and lung disease here on the ground. And so I'm assuming you're measuring those particulates. But then what happens once it hits the ground and goes into the earth and the groundwater and all of that? How is that being measured as well?
Thank you, Ricky. David, Mike, who wants to field this one?
I'll take that one. This is David. So we do see wildfire signals in wet deposition. So the fires are burning out west. The pollution moves east with the winds. The rain washes that pollution out of the atmosphere and it comes down here to the ground. That's a lot of the reason why people use our data and want our data is to try to figure out what sort of impacts those pollutants are having on the ecosystem that all that pollution is washing into. So that's a main reason for why we exist. Our part is to figure out how much, and then we give our data out to scientists, and then they figure out what impact that's having. And a lot of what she's interested in with fires, there's a lot of carbon, black carbon in those fires. There's a lot of nitrogen compounds. There's a lot of organic compounds. There's mercury in there, a lot of different kind of pollutants. And so our job is to figure out how much and how fast it's coming down. And then we serve our data back out to anybody and everybody that wants to use that data to do further study. Basically, how is it impacting the environment it's coming into?
I would imagine.
Very good question.
Yes, I would imagine, too, that high winds like that would be dry deposition. But then the high winds would mix with the wet stuff, the precipitation, which also is carrying harmful pollutants. And when you mix dry with the wet, what might happen?
Well, yeah, you're making a very good distinction. Out west, where it's very dry and it doesn't rain a lot, The general condition is dry deposition of pollutants dominates. And here in the east, where we have a lot more rain, generally speaking, wet deposition levels are higher. The sum of those two we call total deposition, or deposition from whatever fact. And it's basically a lot of the same pollutants. It's just coming down in different ways.
Okay. Mike Randall, where in Wisconsin are these, where is the technology located for the measurements?
We've got a variety of sites across Wisconsin. And again, I would, David probably knows off the top of his head exactly where. But one of the places that people can see if they want to is right here in Madison at the UW Arboretum. If you go to the visitor center, there, just go about a tenth of a mile to the west of that, like park in the parking lot there, walk around the south side of the building, and you'll see a fenced garden area. And in that garden area is some rather odd looking equipment. And you can go there and see it for yourself. And we typically go out there once a week on Tuesday mornings around 9:30, 10 a.m. So if people want to see us changing out samples, you can do that. So it's in that regard, it's rather accessible, but that's the exception. Most of the time, these samplers are in very far-flung places, just so that we can get a broad base for where the sampling takes place. Like, does it make a difference to sample in a rural versus an urban area?
Do you check on those sites remotely? How do you take those samples to labs?
That's a really good question. And this is one of the things that I think is exciting to me about this program, because the people out in the field are hired locally. So they may not have a scientific background per se, but we train people to go and collect the samples in a very careful, methodical way. And then they ship them back to us. And so that we can do all the processing here. And we've got a very dedicated crew that receives hundreds of boxes every week from these sampling stations. They make sure that it all gets distributed and processed the way it needs to be. And for the people in the field, if they have a problem of any kind, they call us. They call our group, the we're the specifically inside of the NADP, we're the network equipment depot. So if anybody, any field operator or any site operator has a question, they can call us or email us or get in touch with us, and we can talk them through it. And they need a new equipment replaced or new parts, whatever. We make sure that happens quickly.
Mike Randall there, instrumentation technologist, David Gray, coordinator of the National Atmospheric Deposition Program. Let's bring on another caller, Barbara in Wisconsin Dells. Barbara, what's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. Another groundwater question. I hike a lot out west and down south in the mountains, and I rely on the springs that the water is coming directly out of the mountains through the rocks. And if I can get that kind of water, I don't even bother to treat it because it's been filtered for, you know, millennia coming through the mountains. But if these non-organic things, the microplastics and mercury and whatnot are in the water, are they getting through those mountains as well? And also sometimes I have to fill up at streams where I do boil it or treat it with ultraviolet light, but that's not going to get rid of those inorganic things, I don't mm-hmm. think. How do I get rid of that when I'm out in the wild?
Barbara, thank you. How do atmospheric pollutants falling into the streams where Barbara is hiking, what effect does that have, David?
So a lot of these streams that she's mentioning and the lakes are fed by precipitation. Now, not all of the pollutants in the precipitation end up in the water, because if it falls out on the land, infiltrates into the soil, a lot of those pollutants end up staying in the soils. Some of those can move down to the groundwater, but that's a long trip for those pollutants. So a lot of the people that use our data spend a lot of time studying exactly what she's questioning. And it's a very complicated question for sure. Some certainly, atmospheric pollutants certainly are ending up in the lakes and in the rivers, but a lot of it's ending up in the soils. How much of it ends up in the groundwater is a good question. Depends on the pollutant, depends on a lot of things, what the soil and superstructure looks like in the geology. It's a very complicated question.
Another complicated issue is PFAS forever chemicals. Are there other pollutants that your program is considering monitoring for?
So we have a lot of scientists that get together on a regular basis that are part of NADP, and anybody within NADP can bring to the group new pollutants to study, and PFAS is one of them. We have a test going on right now for PFAS in precipitation. We're working with the State Lab of Hygiene, which is where we're based, by the way. Mm-hmm. And the DNR in Wisconsin to measure PFAS in precipitation currently. There's an effort to look at black carbon in precipitation. There's another effort to look for organic nitrogen, which is something we don't measure, and total phosphorus, which is connected to algal blooms and all that sort of thing. So we're continually sort of sifting through current trends and what we should be looking at versus what we have looked at in the past. But we continue to do this sort of basic chemistry measurement, and we're always open to new ideas.
New ideas. And Mike, you know, the instrumentation from the 70s, when you look to add new chemicals to monitor, can that instrumentation support these new chemicals you want to look at?
Well, the beauty of it is that we're collecting rainwater in specially lined buckets. So as long as the bucket and the liner don't add anything to it, which we're very careful that they don't, the water itself can be examined and studied and analyzed for whatever people are interested in. So it makes the program very flexible. And so it's not necessarily a function of the age of the equipment. It's just a matter of what do people want, and then the good people here at NADP will devise a sampling program that fits a particular client's needs.
How can volunteers get involved, Mike?
I don't know.
David, is there any role for volunteers?
We can certainly
citizen scientists.
We can always start sites at new locations. And we do have volunteers that actually operate our sites. We put all of our data online. Mm-hmm. If you go to our website, nadp.wslh.wisc.edu, you'll find all of our standard operating procedures, descriptions of exactly how we do it, where we measure it, and they can download any and all of the data that we have going back to 1978. And so they can always get involved on the scientific side, trying to understand what's going on, those sorts of things.
Wow, very open source there. Well, David and Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Certainly.
That's been fun.
Yes, wonderful to be here.
David Gay, coordinator of the National Atmospheric Deposition Program. Mike Randall is an instrumentation technologist with the program. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.